On Monday, we spoke with NPR's TV critic Eric Deggans about the serial documentary The Jinx, which aired its last installment on HBO Sunday and, of course, made headlines for airing an alleged confession from the film's subject, Robert Durst, who was suspected in three murders. The alleged confession was after the film's producers, led by Andrew Jarecki, presented Durst with damning evidence that his handwriting matched handwriting in police evidence. He then went into a bathroom with what's called a hot mic, still recording, said, "That's it, you're caught," and then this.
"The hell did I do? Kill them all, of course.
What did I do? Kill them all, of course." Robert Durst had been arrested the day before the finale and later charged with murder in the death of a friend. The film was a cinematic triumph, but there are still ethical questions, and that's the wheelhouse of NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik, who joins us weekly to talk about media issues. Hi, David.
Hey there, Robin.
And full disclosure, I've made documentaries. Some of the most powerful sound comes when people wander behind closed doors, but these people have never been suspected murderers. So start with those microphones. Would you have aired that sound?
Well, you know, it's probably not a slam dunk in the sense of 100% yes to zero no, but I think it was fair game in this case. And I'll tell you that for two reasons, one of which is that was sort of at the conclusion of this very intense final interview, that what's considered the second interview that the filmmakers had with Robert Durst. During the first one, which took place over 3 days a couple years earlier, he actually, during a kind of an intercession between questions, was sitting by himself and seemingly rehearsing answers. And his lawyer comes over and says, "You know, you're mic'd up. You can be heard by the producers here. They know exactly what you're saying." And he says something to the effect of, "Thanks." And then he goes on rehearsing his answers anyway. He doesn't seem to care even when informed that he's mic'd. And similarly, in this case, they were kind of expecting to wrap up a sandwich and send him along his way. He asked to duck in. He hadn't taken the microphone off. I'm not so troubled by that. The second part is, of course, that we are talking about the death of three people here that he at least seemingly is implicating himself in. I remember one time talking to another reporter when I was not a media critic, who was working on some stuff involving people who had participated in death squads in Central America. And they had at one point said, "You know, don't take pictures of us." And this colleague of mine, this person I knew, said, "Go ahead, shoot the shots. They're killers." Mm. Now, I'm not sure that was the strictest ethical decision to do, but, you know, he was documenting people who had taken the lives of innocents. Mm. And in a sense, you can argue that a rough justice journalistically is being administered there.
Well, the filmmakers said they didn't discover the audio for 2 years after it was recorded. They also said they were talking to investigators in Los Angeles. We don't know what filmmakers were actually saying to investigators along the way, but what about both the audio and that damning handwriting test? As soon as they have that, long before they've edited it together, and they know that they have a possible murderer who presumably could walk and, you know, run away and murder again if he knew he was cornered, should they then have gone to investigators and not waited for a finale and said, "We have this"? We don't know what they did, but should they have?
Yeah, and this is a problem. It's not clear that there was some sort of ethical breach here, but it's a problem of transparency with us as viewers and people who now have a stake in this. It was a mesmerizing six-part documentary, I would say, by and large. And yet there are things we just don't know about the timeline. They said they discovered the audio about 2 years after that second interview took place, that it was essentially, you know, debris at the end of the audio tape that other editors brought in to review their audio found. And they've said that that authorities in Los Angeles, who have been investigating the murder of one of Durst's friends, Susan Berman, that they have informed things and that the people in L.A. have known for months about the evidence they had. Similarly, handwriting evidence that they developed thanks to the to an envelope handed to them by a young man who effectively was the son of this woman who was killed, that seemingly also implicated Durst with very similar handwriting and very similar characteristics of how, for example, he misspelled Beverly Hills. We don't know that. And so we don't know, you know, there are things that they did in terms of recreation that involves the tension between artistry and journalism, and things that we don't know in terms of in terms of what they shared with law enforcement officials, which go to a slightly different tension, that between, say, being a good journalist, civic duty, a good citizen and civic duty versus being a good showman and saving things for the documentary itself. Right. But they say that they did share things months ago with authorities, and certainly authorities arrested Durst in New Orleans at the behest of California officials just before the final episode was aired.
And David, we just have a couple seconds here, but the New York Times journalist who broke the story of that arrest was also in the documentary. Do you have any questions there?
Well, he broke the story of the arrest. He didn't report on the documentary itself, but he's one of the few people in America best versed on all the minutiae of this trial and the previous trial and other things. I don't have an ethical issue. He wasn't even paid by the producers for the film. I think they went to him because he was an established authority in this and remains so for the New York Times to this day.
Well, presumably they would have asked him if he held information, and the New York Times would have vetted that. NPR's media correspondent David Folkenflik, thank you as always.
You bet.